All right. Morning, everyone. So we're holding on Yud Zayin Omud Beis by the Mishnah. Now, after having digressed the last few days, talking about things that didn't directly have to do with Shabbos, now we're getting back to things that have to do with Shabbos directly. And now we're going to start with a bunch of cases where Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argue about things that you're allowed to do or not allowed to do before Shabbos. Or right before Shabbos. So this is, we said before, that the Rambam understands that there's three sets of 18 halachas between the Shammai and the Silo, where one set they agreed on to begin with, one set they disagreed on, and then eventually agreed on. The Shammai outvoted the Silo, and those were the Yurchas Dover that we spent the last few days talking about. And then we're going to have more halachas now from here till the end of the Peret, where the Shammai and the Silo continue to disagree, and as usual, the halachas like the Silo. So the Mishnah starts out, Beis Shammai Emet, Ein Shodin Diyoi. Beis Shammai says that before Shabbos, you're not allowed to start soaking materials for ink, which would be a malacha. Some of the Mepharshim say it would be Rashi says later on that it would be a malacha of, that it would be a malacha of wash, of kneading, because when you put the material for the ink together, when you put the material for the ink into the water, even without actually kneading it, even without actually mixing it together with your hands or a stirrer or whatever, it still sticks together. So therefore it's a tolda of losh. And then you have other rishonim that learn that actually might be a melacha of seveya, of dying, whatever. So you're not allowed to. See, we know you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. The Shammai is saying you're not allowed to do it on erev Shabbos either, unless it's finished before Shabbos. So the sammonim, or you're not allowed to soak in water dye materials, same thing. The karshinin, or a type of beans, where those beans, either you put them in water, it's one of two things. Either you have a problem soaking beans on Shabbos because then it causes them to grow and sprout, and therefore it's a malacha of zerea. Or you have that they're the kind of beans that stick together in water, and then you're back to the problem. So the Shammai is saying that you're not in Shodin Diyo, you're not allowed to soak stuff for dye, the sammonim or other substances like Diyo is ink, the sammonim or dye stuff, the kashinin or beans. You're not allowed to do that even on erev Shabbos. Elikadeshi Shodin with Odyoim, unless you do it early enough in the day that there would be time for the soaking to be finished before Shabbos begins, and then it just stays in there the rest of Shabbos. The reason for that, we're going to discuss in the Gemara, Beis Shammai holds of a concept called Shvisas Tevin. We know you yourself are not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. We know you're not allowed to have your animals do malacha on Shabbos, ato, rincha, et cetera, or hemtacha. Beis Shammai holds, as we see in the Gemara, that you're also not allowed to have your kalin do malacha for you on Shabbos. So therefore, that's why they're saying in this case that you have to have all these things. You have to have the soaking finished before Shabbos, so the kalin itself is not accomplishing the malacha on Shabbos. Whereas the Sibyl says it's mutter because, as we'll see in the Gemara, they don't hold of this concept of Shvisas Kalim. We'll discuss in the Gemara, by the way. I'm sure you're probably wondering, according to the Shabbos, so like, how do you light candles before Shabbos if they're going to be burning, going into Shabbos? How do you leave a pot of food on the stove before Shabbos? So we'll see in the Gemara what the Shabbos does with all that. Next, the Shammai Omer, Ein Noisin Urin Shal Pishta Mosecha Tanur. The Shammai says that you're not allowed to put bundles of flax into the oven before Shabbos. Elikadesh Yavilu with Oidion, unless there's enough time for them to get heated up and bleached before Shabbos. So, because to do it on Shabbos would be a malacha of malabin, of bleaching. So, like this again, the Shammai is saying that you can't. That if you can't do it on, you can't do it on Shabbos itself, everybody agrees to that, but you can't even do it before Shabbos if there's not enough time for it to be finished before Shabbos. Same thing, Shvisas Kalim, because you'd be doing the Malacha of the Laban. So you're not allowed to do that. Although if it's Semer L'Yoda, you're also not allowed to put wool into a vat full of dye, Elikadisha Yikla to Ayin, unless there's time enough before Shabbos for the wool to absorb the dye before Shabbos begins, again, Shvisas Kalim, or Vesil Matir, Bacillus has both of them on mutter. Now, as far as the Shammai, there's really no chiddush. There's really no chiddush in this compared to the previous one. So the same issue with Shrisas Kalim. The chiddush with Beis Hillel is that even though in this case you would think, now we know we're going to learn extensively in the third paragraph about the whole concept, and actually we're going to discuss in all of Gemara, and we're going to discuss as we go from here to the end of between here and the end of the paragraph, we're going to be discussing, and also in the third paragraph we're going to be discussing more about the dinim of leaving stuff on the fire on Shabbos, when you're allowed to, when you're not allowed to, when you have to put a blech, et cetera. We'll deal with all of that a little bit at the end of our parak, and most of it in all Gemara today, and then more in the next couple of days, and then extensively more in the third parak. So you would think over here, Basila would have a little more of a problem with it, especially because actually, unlike in the previous case, where you know you're soaking stuff in water, and the keli itself is pretty much completely passive. Here on the face of it, the oven is a little more active. In fact, all the oven is what's being used to heat up the flax or the dye that's going to be absorbed in the wool. And still, they still says it's mutter. We're going to see in the morning actually that when it comes to this thing about the wool in the vat, we're going to see there are some conditions that the civil puts on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next. The Shammai, and in person the Sodas Chayav Ophis with dogging, the Shammai says you're not allowed to put out traps to trap wild animals or birds or fish, Elikadesh Yitzodim of Odion, unless there's enough time in the day before Shabbos for the animal or what have you to be trapped in it, because otherwise you're doing the Malacha of Sod, and again, otherwise you have a problem with Shmizeth Kalim, that your Kalim is doing a Malacha for you on Shabbos. Even though the trap is much more active than either of the previous things, even compared to, for example, you have flax bleaching in an oven, where the oven itself is a little more active than the first case, fine, because the oven is what's actually being heated up in. But the oven itself is not doing anything; it's the heat source that's doing something. Whereas over here, the actual trap itself is doing something, depending on the kind of trap. You have certain kinds of traps where, you know, like you have nowadays with mouse traps or whatever, where when the animal steps on the trap, then all of a sudden it gets activated. So you would think maybe Basila would have more of a problem with it, but we're still saying that Basila doesn't have a problem with it and allows you to put them out before Shabbos, even though the animal may get tracked on Shabbos.
How long before Shabbos? Let's say you put it one millisecond before Shabbos, then the likelihood of it being caught on Shabbos is very, very high.
That's fine. Basila didn't have a problem with that because, as we're going to say in the Gemara, again, Basila doesn't hold of the problem of Shavisa's Kalim. That doesn't hold that that your Kali has to rest from work on Shabbos. So as long as you put it out before Shabbos, then we're good. According to Beis Shammai, Tosfos points out, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, that Beis Shammai would actually put a couple of conditions on it. Number one, you would need that it has to be early enough in the day, as we said in the Mishnah. But in addition, you would also have to have, it's a place where there are a lot of animals or birds or what have you. So the likelihood is from when you put out the trap until the animal gets caught is a very short amount of time. And another one, the Yerushalmi says, and this is according to Beis Shammai, you would have to have the trap would be small enough that only one animal or bird or whatever could be caught in it. Otherwise, you still have the same problem. One animal gets caught in it before Shabbos, fine, but another animal may still get caught in it on Shabbos. So Beis Shammai, who holds the Shvisas Kalim, is going to require all those conditions. This hero who doesn't hold the Shvisas Kalim, as we're going to say in the Gemara, they don't care about that. They say as long as you put it out sometime before Shabbos, then it's okay, even though the tracking itself takes place on Shabbos. By the way, as we go through the Gemara, we'll discuss Bezus Hashem, how this applies, for example, the Shabbos clocks and such things. So we'll get to that soon, Bezus Hashem. Okay. Next. The next one over here, the next two that we're going to deal with over here are not a matter of Shvisas Kalim, but something else, a matter of giving the Goy a job to do before Shabbos. Beis Shammai says that on Erev Shabbos, you're not allowed to sell something to a guy, or help him load up an animal with stuff, or lift up a burden onto his back. In all those cases, you can't even do it on Erev Shabbos, unless there's enough time before Shabbos for him to be able to reach a nearby place. Meaning, Rashi says, that's the same kind of thing, similar to before, that it has to be completed before Shabbos begins. Now, here it's not a matter of Shavuot Kalim. Here it's a matter of that. Here it's a matter of that. Mitzvah Shammai doesn't want you to be doing it so late in the day, where the guy doesn't have the time to finish the job before Shabbos, because then it looks like he's doing it as your agent on Shabbos. Over civil material, again, the civil says it's mutter because then they're not worried about that. As long as we'll see in the Gemara there's actually two versions of this civil's opinion. Doesn't have to be that at least he's able to reach the next city where he's going, or doesn't have to be as long as he's able to leave your house before Shabbos. So we'll see about that in the Gemara. But in any case, according to the Shabbos, he would actually have to reach his destination according to the Sil before Shabbos, according to the Sil Lidah. Another case, the Shabbos ain't nothing odus la'abdon. The Shabbos says he's not allowed to give skins of animals to a tanner, but like Kalim Lakovisnach, or clothes to a Goyish laundryman. Unless there's enough time before Shabbos for the job to be finished. Now again, here it's not a matter of Shvisas Kalim, because the Kalim themselves are completely passive. The Malacha is being done to them, it's not being done with them. However, you have the same problem that it's going to look like a Goy is doing it as your agent, and therefore the Shammai has a problem with that. With all of these things that we mentioned so far, the Silo allows you to do it as long as the sun is still shining, as long as Shabbos hasn't actually begun yet. Tosfos begins a discussion over here about this that we're saying that the Silo says it's mutter. Tosfos discusses the question. Now, here in the Mishnah, we're talking about things that are detached from the ground. We're talking the talcum. We're talking skins. We're talking laundry. What about, for example, that you have a guy doing, building or renovating a house for you? Would you be able to do that on Shabbos? Would you be able to give him the job before Shabbos, even though he may end up doing it on Shabbos? So Tosfos brings various proofs that actually, yes, that if he's doing it, when you give somebody a job to do, there's two ways that we can have him do it. You can have him where you pay him by the hour, and then you can have where you pay him by the job. And for example, when you hire somebody to build a house, you don't usually pay them by the hour. You make up an advance, an amount, how much it's going to cost to build or to renovate or so forth, and then that's the amount you pay. So Tosfos discusses over here that maybe based on what we're saying over here, the same way as, for example, you can give the laundry to the guy before Shabbos, even though he may end up doing it on Shabbos, the same way it should be allowed. For example, if you hire a guy, if you contract with a guy, let's say, to build a house. Because just discusses the pros and cons of it, says maybe it's different after all, because when it's something attached to the ground, then there's less leeway, for one thing, because then people know that it's a job for a yid. So in fact, Tosfos brings in this connection that even though Rabbeinu Tam held that you're allowed to, in practice, when Rabbeinu Tam had his house built, he didn't want to be so mechamat and in a way of the day to be doing the work on Shabbos. So we'll see as we go, we'll discuss some in the Gemara today, and then we'll discuss more tomorrow, Beis Hashem, about these various dinim of when you're allowed and not allowed to have a guy do work for you on Shabbos. Obviously, you can't tell him on Shabbos itself. That would be amir lachum. But when are you allowed to tell him before Shabbos to do the job, even if he may end up doing it on Shabbos itself, and when not? So we see from this Tosfos, for example, that for one thing, there's a distinction between whether it's something that he takes and does on his own premises, like for example, the skins or the laundry, or whether it's something that he's doing on your premises, which if it's, for example, a house or something like that, then of necessity it's on your premises because he's building it on site. That's one of the distinctions you have in Halacha about that. And then there's other distinctions also, which we'll get to as we go on, Beis Hashem. Okay. Mm-hmm. Continues the Mishnah. Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, noyeg in hoyu beis aba, shayu noisin kolov and makovis nachri, shloshu yomim kodem l'shabbos. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, my father's family used to have the minhag that when it came to white garments, which white garments, it's very hard to clean them properly, they would give them to a goyish laundryman 3 days before Shabbos. In other words, in this particular case, even though Rav Shimon Gamliel's family are the Nesiim, and as the Nesiim, their descendants from Hillel, nevertheless, in this particular thing, they would be machmir on themselves like the Shammai, and they would only give in they wouldn't give in the white clothes to the laundryman to wash, and it would get 3 days before Shabbos, out of the concern that he might end up washing them on Shabbos. Continues the mission of the Shavin Elu and Elu. Now both the Shama and the Hillel do agree. Shaturian and Curtis Beis Abad the Iguri Agas, that what you are allowed to do before Shabbos is you're allowed to put on, you have grapes in the grape press, or you have olives in the olive press, you're allowed to put the beam on them before Shabbos. You're allowed to put Curtis Beis Abad, the beam of the olive press, the Iguri Agas, or the round press of the wine press, you're allowed to put that on before Shabbos, and the juice will continue oozing out of the fruit throughout Shabbos. Now, why is that allowed, even according to Beis Shammai? The reason is, and Rashi brings from the Gemara later on, that what it is like this. We know that there is a malacha. You're not allowed to squeeze fruit on Shabbos. We're going to discuss that in more detail towards the end of the Masechta. That's the Shem. But that's when the fruit was still whole before Shabbos. In this case, you already started pressing them before Shabbos. You already started breaking them up before Shabbos. Rashi describes, when do you put the beam on them, or when do you put the press on them? Only if you're supposed to ground them up. So they're already ground up. They're already broken up. Now at that point, in the case of olives, in the case of grapes, you first tread on them with your feet. So therefore, as it is, they're already broken up and juice is starting to ooze out of them. The beam or the press or whatever just makes it that you're going to get more olive oil or more grape juice out of them. So therefore, the Shammai doesn't have a problem with that, because then at that point, once the fruit is broken up, then already it's not a malacha to be squeezing them more to get more juice out. All right, so that's the mission. The Gemara starts off. Man tana misinus mayim b'dzoi zui shriyasam. Which tana is it that says that just putting water, mixing together water with material for ink, is already considered a malacha of shriya? Even if you didn't actually mix them together, then you're already over on the malacha of wash, because we see the mission of the Shammai is saying that just you're not allowed to put in material for ink into water. Even they're not talking about when you actually stir it together or mix it together or whatever. Just the fact of putting it into water is already a malacha. And even the fillers agree that it's a malacha. They're saying you're allowed to do it before Shabbos begins. But which Tana says that? Amar Rav Yosef Rebbe. So the Yosef says that would be specifically Rebbe. The Tanya, because we learn in a brisa. If you have a case, for example, Echad Noson as a Kemach, suppose you have a bunch of people get together to make dough on Shabbos. One of them puts in the flour into the container. The Echad Noson as a Mayim, and another one pours in water. Like you have in a massive bakery now. So one puts in the flour, one puts in the water. Only the second one is higher because of the Moaha wash. The first one is not higher. Just pouring in the flour. Pouring into the flour into the container is not yet a malacha. Divrei Rebbe, that's what Rebbe says, just pouring in the water is enough to make them higher for the malacha of loss, even though he didn't actually mix the flour and water together, he just poured in the water. Rebbe Yossi, you're only chayev if you actually need them together. So by the same logic, we're assuming the same thing would apply as far as dye. As far as ink. That Rebbe would say that just putting ink stuff into the water is enough to be already chayav for the malacha of wash. And as Yosef Yehuda would say, just putting it into the water is not enough. You'd actually have to stir it together. However, Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabbi Yosef, that's not necessarily so. The Dilma ad kam leka omer Rabbi Yosef el b'kemach. Maybe Rabbi Yosef is only saying you have to knead them together in order to be chayav, only when it comes to flour. The Baal Gibel, where after all, flour is something that you're capable of kneading together. that's how it is. You put flour and water together, and then you knead them, and you get something. The flour has gluten in it, and therefore it becomes a semi-solid substance when you mix it together.
What
literally means mixing, like mixing or kneading. So dough is something that you need to knead in order to make it, and then once you knead it, then it becomes a semi-solid thing, a dough.
Right.
Avol Dieu, but when it comes to ink, the last about Gibbel, you don't really have that concept of Gibbel. You don't really have that when you stir it together, it becomes a semi-solid thing. Maybe you would say that even Rabbeinu would agree that he's chayev as soon as he puts the water in, because that's all it's going to become. It's not going to become any other kind of consistency as a result of mixing it. All that mixing does is it disperses, it spreads out the ink stuff more evenly in the water, so you don't have clumps of it here and so you don't have clumps of it here and there. But it's not like the dough, where when you need dough, you actually end up with a mass that is different than the different inconsistency than the original flour that you put in. So therefore, maybe the JC would say, when you have that, when you're able to do gibble, then you have to do gibble in order to be chayev. And therefore, it's not like Rebbe who says that just pouring the flour into the water would be enough to be mechayev him. You'd actually have to knead it. But when it comes to ink, maybe not. The Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, "Loi sakadaitach." No, you can't think that way. You can't, yeah, because we learn in another braisa. Echad noisen es eifah ve'echad noisen es amayim. Let's talk about. Let's say it wasn't flour that we're trying to mix together. Let's say it's ashes. So one person puts in ashes into a container, and another one pours water over it. So again, Rebbe says that the one who pours in the water is chayev for the malacha of losh. And again, Rebbe says only if you knead it together. Now, ashes are not the kind of thing where if you knead them together, you get a mass like you would with dough. And you still see Rabbi Yehuda Ben Yehuda requires that there has to be a kneading process, there has to be a mixing process in order for him to be chayav. So the same thing would apply to the ink in our Mishnah.
Meaning what? Meaning you have a mixing process?
Yeah, in other words, Rabbi Yehuda Ben Yehuda would say, whether we're talking about flour, where mixing actually creates something of a different consistency, or whether we're talking about something like in the case of ashes, where it really doesn't. You mix ashes in water, even if you mix them together, you don't really end up with a mass because the ashes don't really stick together. And still we see that Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda is saying just pouring in water is not enough to make it chayav chatas, so you actually have to stir it. So we'd say the same thing in our Mishnah. According to Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda, the Shammai wouldn't have a problem with him putting ink stuff into water, because that itself is not a malacha, only if he actually mixes it together with the malacha, and the Shammai would require him to do that before Shabbos. So far, Rabbi Yosef is right. So far, Rabbi Yosef is right then on Mishnah, which doesn't mention that detail, can only be a thorn to them. However, the Gemara says not necessarily. The Dilma by Afer offer. Maybe not. Maybe when the Braisi uses the word Afer, which means ashes, maybe what it really means is the word offer, which is dust. We do find in a number of places where the words afer and offer are used a little bit loosely, where one is used instead of the other one. For example, we have by the Parah Adumah, the pasuk says over there that you take from the afar sreifa sachatas, the dust of the burning of the Parah Adumah. Now, obviously, you don't burn it; it doesn't become dust; it becomes ashes. But still, the pasuk calls it offer.
But it refers to ashes, not to dust.
That's the point. Even though there it refers to ashes, the pasuk doesn't use the word aether, it uses the word offer. So from there,
how do we know that? Is that
well, that's just how it is. Because the fact is, afar sreifa sachatas, it doesn't mean dust. When you burn the Parah Adumah, you don't end up with dust; you end up with ashes. And still, mm-hmm. The pasuk is calling it offer. So we see that the word offer can be used loosely for aether, and the reverse is also true. So maybe when the Braisa said aether, what it really means is offer. Maybe what it really means is dust. Now, dust is the kind of thing where when you mix it with water, or when you knead it together, you do get something of a new consistency because you get clay. So maybe Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda would make a distinction between something where you get a mass when you mix it together, like dough or like dirt, as opposed to things where you don't, like ink or like acid. So the Gemara says, no, v'hatanya efer, v'hatanya offer. No, because we have two braises about that mention this machlokas of Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda and Rebbe. One mentions in that connection aether, ashes. The other one mentions offer, dust. And we still see that they argue about it. So apparently, Rabbi Yosef Ben Yehuda would argue even in the case where you don't get a mass when you mix it together. However, the Gemara says, "Nidi gabi hadadi tanya." So yeah, those two glasses weren't necessarily taught together. They didn't come from the same base medrash. You could have, let's say, one of them one of them, let's say, was from the Kriya's Beis Medrash. One of them was from the Oshia's Beis Medrash. So what happens is, therefore, in different places, they use different styles. In one Beis Medrash, they use the word Afer to mean specifically ashes. In the other one, they use the word Ofer to mean ashes, like we just saw the Pasuk does. So maybe both of them indeed are referring to ashes, or maybe not. Maybe both of them are referring to dirt. And dirt is different than ashes in that when you mix dirt with water and you mix them together, you do get something of a different consistency. You get mud, you get clay or whatever. So maybe only then does your basin of Yehuda hold that you need gibble in order to be chayav. But if it's something like ashes or ink, where anyway gibble doesn't really make a difference because you still end up with the pieces don't really stick together together with the water, then maybe not. So therefore, based on that, we have no solid reason to say that our Mishnah should be only according to Rebbe and not according to the Yosef of Yehuda as well. Maybe the Yosef of Yehuda would agree. With our Mishnah that even though there was no gibble, even though there's no kneading, but in the case of ink stuff or dye stuff or whatever, you don't need it because you don't really get something different. As a result, you don't really get something different as a result of gibble as you would without it. So no proof one way or the other. We can very well say that our Mishnah goes according not just according to Rebbe, like Rabbi Yosef said, but also according to Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda, which of course we would prefer to do because it's a Stam Mishnah, and we would prefer that a Stam Mishnah goes according to everybody.
Okay. Because of the results or because of the process?
Well, so in other words, we have two ways of understanding Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda. One is that he always is going to require a kneading process, a mixing process, in order to be mechayev. Just putting in water together with some kind of powdery stuff is not going to be enough to be mechayev him. The other way of looking is that Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda is going to distinguish between things where when you mix them together, you actually get something of a new consistency. Like you would with flour or you would with dirt. But he would say that when you don't get something of a different consistency anyway, like is the case with ashes or with ink material, then you'd be chayav regardless just for putting in the water. So you could understand Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda either way. And if you understand in the first way, then if you understand in the first way that you always need gibble, then it wouldn't work with our Mishnah, which doesn't mention gibble. If you say the second way, then it would work because ink is not one of those things that requires gibble.
What about if a yid does part and a goy does the rest? What does Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda think about that?
Well, it would be the same thing. In other words, if we say that putting in water itself is enough to be mechayev him, then he'd be chayev for that. If Rabbi Yosef ben Yehuda holds that you need gibble, then the yid who put in the water would be potter av alasu. He would have been over on an isur d'rabbanan for putting it in, but he wasn't over on the isur d'oraisa. To tell a goy to do it would be also anyway because I'm near lack, but that's something else.
So there
you get into the whole question of asking the goy to do malacha. So again, we touched on it a little bit in the Mishnah. We'll deal with it. Ezra Hashem, we'll deal with it a little bit today if we have the time, and then we'll deal with it more tomorrow about the dinim of telling a goy to do something before Shabbos. So we're going to deal with it a little more tomorrow, and then we'll deal with it here and there throughout the Sabbath. Okay, I'm gone. We learned a brisa. Poskin mayim legina erev Shabbos im chashecha. We have a brisa that says as follows: you're allowed to open up the water, the gate of the dam or whatever, to get water into your garden erev Shabbos im chashecha. Shabbos right before it becomes dark. Or mismalas vahimlachas kolayim kolay, and then it continues filling up with water throughout the day because you started it before Shabbos, so therefore it's okay. You're allowed to put incense under clothes on Erev Shabbos, and then throughout the day, the incense, the smell of the incense gets absorbed into the clothing. You're also allowed to put sulfur under kalim before Shabbos. Rashi describes that you have, for example, silver kalim that have designs on them. What you do is you want to have a very low fire of sulfur under them. And then what happens is the smoke of the sulfur causes the designs to show out more clearly on the silver. Like you have on some bechers and whatever, you have designs that are outlined in black So the way they do that is by exposing them to sulfur smoke. So you were allowed to do that. And with scattered vahochim from a Shabbos kula, and they continue to get that they continue to absorb the sulfur smoke throughout Shabbos. You're also allowed to put killer, which is a type of a killer is a type of medicine a type of bandage. You put it on an eye that a person's eye is hurting before Shabbos. You can put a bandage with ointment on it or whatever on a wound at a Shabbos in Hashecha. It continues healing throughout Shabbos. Again, even though you have a Zeta Dirabanan, that you're not allowed to do various kinds of healing things on Shabbos, as we'll deal with in more detail later in the Mishnah. But here you're allowed to do it before Shabbos because you started it before Shabbos, so the fact that it continues on Shabbos is not a problem. Aval ein nosin chitin l'sofer l'chaim shamayim, but when it comes to if you have a water mill, meaning a millstone that's turned by water, you're not allowed to put wheat into those millstones to grind up before Shabbos. Unless there's enough time for them to be cleaned before Shabbos. Okay, so thus far.
Hello?
What?
Okay. Yeah, I lost you.
So we said...
Rabbi, the sound is going in now. Perhaps if everyone puts it on mute, and only unmute to when they have to ask a question, because the sound is constantly going in and out. It's very hard to hear.
Let me also put it on speaker and see if that helps any. Okay. So again, we said the Braisa had mentioned. A bunch of cases where you're allowed to start a malacha before Shabbos, and the malacha continues on Shabbos. We said you open up the gate for the water, and water starts flowing into the garden before Shabbos. We said you're putting incense under clothing, or you're putting sulfur under silver kalim. You're putting a bandage, you're putting a dressing on an eye or a wound or whatever. But all those things are allowed. But we said you're not allowed to put wheat into a millstone where the mill is turned by water, unless it gets ground before Shabbat.
So what is the difference?
But that's what we have to figure out. My timer. Now, why the distinction? On the Rabbi Mepesha Mashmah Kel. So Rabbi says the reason is because a millstone is very, very loud. So therefore, it's a concept that Rashi mentions called Avsha Milsa. The thing is very loud, so it's a disgrace to Shabbos that you would have something so loud operating on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yosef says to Rabbi, why are you saying the reason is because it's loud? Say that the reason is because of Shvisas Kalim, because you're not allowed to have your Kalim do Malacha for you on Shabbos. The Tanya, as we learn in Ebraisa, we find a pasuk that says, in all that I commanded you, you should be careful. So that's the Rabbi's Shvisas Kalim. Now, the previous pasuk mentions that you have to rest on Shabbos, in order, and it says, mentions over there, your animals have to rest on Shabbos, etc. This is in Parashas Mishpatim. The next pasuk says, in everything that I'm commanding you, you have to be careful. So that includes something else. That includes Kalim as well. That you're not allowed to have your Kalim do Malacha for you on Shabbos. In fact, the Sfasemis points out the word Kol can be related to the word Kalim. So therefore, so the pasuk is hinting that when it comes to a Kali, you have to be careful not to allow it to be doing Malacha for you on Shabbos.
But it says Alechim.
So that's you. You're the one who's putting the keli into action. So therefore, so Rav Yosef is arguing that based on that braisa, Shvisas Kalim apparently is an issue d'oraisa. And if it's an issue d'oraisa, then that would explain why you can't put wheat into a mill before Shabbos. And we'll see in a second in that case. Then how does he explain the previous cases in the braisa? So Rabbi Yosef says, actually, yeah.
The reason why you're not, the reason why the Braisa is saying you're not allowed to grind up wheat on Shabbos in a millstone, even if the millstone is being turned by water. If the millstone, if the mill, by the way, if the mill is being turned by a person or by an animal, there's no question you can't do that on Shabbos. The person's not allowed to do the malacha on Shabbos. The person's not allowed to do the malacha on Shabbos, and you're not allowed to have a goy do it for you either. You can't have an animal do malacha for you on Shabbos either. So the only question is, if you're a millstone that's being turned by water power, or, okay, you know, nowadays the equivalent would be, let's say, it was being turned by electricity or whatever. So Rabbi Yosef is saying that it's not just something specific to that, like Rabbi is saying, because it's noisy. In general, you wouldn't be allowed to have Caleb do malacha for you on Shabbos. So the question then becomes, so Ella Amar Rabbi Yosef, Mishum Shvisa Kalim. So Rabbi Yosef says, as a matter of fact, that is the reason why you're not allowed to put wheat into the mill before Shabbos, is because you have the problem of Shvisa Kalim. So the question is, Bahashta the Amit of Ishilu Ishilu Shvisa Kalim Daraita. Okay, if you're going to say, Rabbi Yosef, that Shvisa Kalim is an issue even according to Ishilu, then let's revisit the Braisa. We have to revisit the Braisa, and we have to revisit our Mishnah as well, because we had several cases in our Mishnah where Basil was allowing you to start a Malacha before Shabbos. If we say that Basil holds the Shvitas Kalim as well, then how do all those cases work? So Vahashka Ja'amat Basil Islu Shvitas Kalim, if now you're going to say that Basil also holds of Shvitas Kalim, that you're not allowed to have your Kalim do Malacha for you on Shabbos, Daraisa, and you're going to say that that concept is Daraisa, then Gofris Umugma my time is Sharu. Then why would they allow the cases that we had in the Braisa, where you're putting incense where you're putting incense and the incense is burning throughout Shabbos and causing the clothes to get perfumed, or the case of the sulfur where you're having it smoking throughout Shabbos and making the designs come out more clearly on the silver, and for that matter, a number of cases in the Mishnah where we have the case where you're soaking material for dye, the cases where you're putting flasks into the oven, etc. So according to all, if you're going to say that, they still hold the Shvitas Kalim. How do all those work?
And Shvitas Kalim is Daraisa, you're saying.
If we say that Shvitas Kalim is Daraisa, and the reason is Mishnah Kolay Ka'avid Maisa. The reason is because in those cases, the keli itself is not doing a Maisa. Because when it comes to, for example, you put, let's say, for example, the incense, the mugma, before Shabbos to perfume the clothes. Okay, but the keli itself is just the incense is just sitting over there, it's burning over there, but the container that you have the incense in is not actually doing anything. It's just on the ground and the incense is inside it, as opposed to a millstone is actually operating, is actually turning. So Beshamai would be machnu even in that case. They would say, so far, that's what we're saying. Beshamai would be saying, even if the keli is doing its job completely passively, it would still be awesome. Whereas Basila would say, fine, we agree with you on the concept of Shvitas Kalim, but we hold, in order for it to be also, the Kalim has to actually be doing something actively, which is the case with a millstone, but it's not the case, for example, with the container that you have, with a container, with a brazier or whatever, that you have incense in, or a pot where you have dye soaking or whatever. Okay. What about Unin Shal Pishta, my time of Sharu? So if we're going to go that way, what about the case in our Mishnah where we said that you put bundles of flax into the oven before Shabbos? Why would they allow that? I mean, the oven is getting involved over there because the oven is what's heating it up. And the reason is still Mishum Deloy Oven Meister. After all, though, no, the oven is not really doing anything. The oven itself is passive. The oven itself is just retaining the heat from the coals or whatever that you put in there. The oven is just sitting there in place. The heat is not coming from the oven itself. The heat is coming from the fuel that you put into the oven. The oven is just there in order to retain the heat, so therefore Basila wouldn't have a problem with that. Again, Bishamai still would. Bishamai would say that Shvitas Kalim applies even in that kind of case. But Basila would say that Shvitas Kalim applies only when the Kali is actively doing something. Okay. What about
Hillel believes Shvitas Kalim does apply or it doesn't apply?
So far, we're not done the discussion yet, but so far, according to Rabbi Yosef, they still would hold Shvitas Kalim does apply. We had a drosha from Fosik of the Chol Asher Amalti Aleichem Tishamehu. so far, what we're saying is the Tilla would agree with that drasha, so they would agree there is something called Shvisas Kelim that you're not allowed to do. The difference would be that the Shammai would be saying that it's always Osir as long as the Keli is being used for Malacha, even if the Keli is completely passive in that. So, for example, in the case of, in the first case of the Devar Mishnah, let's say, for example, you have material for ink soaking in water. The Keli itself is not doing anything. The Keli itself is just holding the water and the ink stuff. And still, the Shammai would say it's a problem. The Silla would say only if the Keli is actively doing something. So, therefore, they would have a problem with millstones that are grinding up wheat, which are actively doing something, but they wouldn't have a problem with for example, soaking ink stuff before Shabbos. So now we're saying that even when it comes to, for example, bundles of flax that are drying in an oven, that are drying and bleaching in an oven, where there the oven is a little more active than that, because on the face of it, you need an actual oven in order to dry it in. But nevertheless, we're gonna say now the fact of the matter is the oven itself is not actually doing the malacha. The oven itself is just passive. The wood or the coal or whatever that you put into the oven is what's doing the job of heating it up. The oven is just retaining the heat. Therefore Beis Shammai would have a problem with it, but Beis Hillel would not.
So according to Beis Hillel, right now, at this point of the Gemara, let's say you activate a watch which has many moving parts that move, a mechanical watch,
yeah. Even
an electrical watch. But
So far, what we're saying is Beis Hillel would have a problem with it. Yes.
He would have a problem with it.
So far, we would say, yes, they would have a problem with it. But we're going to get to, again, we're not done the discussion yet. So wait. Okay. What about this is all according to Yosef's understanding of the matter, which is that in general Beis Hillel holds the Shvitas Kelim. Okay, what about the Gemara asks Mitzodes Chayav Oif B'Dogim? What about we said in the Mishnah that Beis Hillel allows you to put out traps for birds or for wild animals or birds or fish to Ka'avid Maiseh? Now, traps in general are made in such a way that they're active. The animal or whatever steps on the trap. And then the trap snaps shut and traps the animal or the bird or whatever inside. So that's something active. According to Rabbi Yosef's understanding, the Ka'ovid Maisa, such traps do a Maisa, my time a Shoru. So why would the Tillel allow you to put out such traps before Shabbos, Shvitas Kelim? The answer is, Hosam Nami Belechi V'Kukri. The answer is that Rabbi Yosef would say that the Tillel is not going to allow you to do it with just any kind of trap. They would limit it to the kind of traps that work passively. So lechi, for example, Rashi describes as a hook. So what happens? You put a hook into the water before Shabbos, and the fish swallows whatever it is on the hook, and then the hook gets stuck into it. So the hook itself is passive. The cookery, or for example, you have, let's say, when it comes also to catch fish, you have, for example, a kind of fish trap that you make, which consists of a basket, a woven basket where one end is narrow and the other end is wide. So what happens is the fish swims into the basket because there's food in there. So it swims in there to get the food. And then once it's in there, it can't go any further forward, trapped inside the narrow end. And if it tries to go backward, then you have pieces, the trap is made in such a way that you have pieces of the material sticking out so that they'll stick into the side of the fish. They'll stick into the gills or whatever and prevent it from going out. And therefore, the fish is trapped. So the point is, like Kalvin Meister, such traps, for example, like that, hooks and baskets like that, are passive. So therefore, again, according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding, the Tillel will be fine with them. The Shammai is still going to have a problem with them because they apply Shvitas Kelim more generally. But the Tillel is going to say only if the thing is actually doing a Meister, and here it's not. As opposed to, you're right, the Tillel, according to Rabbi Yosef, the Tillel might say, for example, that the kind of trap, let's say, that you have where the animal steps on it and snaps shut. Yes, Rabbi Yosef would say that the Tillel wouldn't allow that either. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now that's all.
So according to Beis Hillel, the mice, it means something moving.
Right. Okay. So far, that's according to Rabbi Yosef. The hashtag, the Omer of Oshia, Omer of Asi, Man Tana Shvitas Kelim Doraita, the Shamehi Veloy Besilol. Now, however, that Rav Oshia said that in the name of Rav Asi, that which Tanoim are they that hold that Shvitas Kelim is Doraita, that would be Bishamai. That would be Bishamai, Veloy Besilol. That would not be according to Besilol. So then we would say Besilol does not hold the Shvitas Kelim at all. then the Beis Shammai, Ben Ka'ovid Maisa, Ben Deloy Ka'ovid Maisa Osir. So then Beis Shammai would say it's also across the board. Then we would say that the Braisa that we were quoting before, so then we would say that the Beis Shammai Ben Ka'ovid Maisa, Ben Deloy Ka'ovid Maisa Osir, whether the Keli is actually doing an active thing at the time, then Beis Shammai would say it's also either way. So therefore, in other words, we assumed all this time that the Braisa that we were quoting with all these examples of things that you're allowed to do, that you're allowed and not allowed to do before Shabbos, we assumed that would be even according to Beis Hillel. Now we're saying that actually Beis Shammai would actually answer all those things, because Beis Shammai would say it doesn't matter whether the Keli is actually actively doing something or not. Either way, it's also to have your Keli do Malacha for you on Shabbos. So they would disagree, for example, and say you can't put out the incense, let's say, before Shabbos in order to perfume the clothes, or you're not, just like we said in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to soak ink stuff or whatever. Either way, the author, and according to Basilo, even if Kaylee does a Maisa, it would be Mutter. So now we don't have to say anymore, for example, that, let's say, with the traps, that we're talking only about passive traps, we could even be talking about active traps, and Basilo doesn't have a problem with it because they don't hold a Shavit of Kaylee.
And that's because otherwise there would be a contradiction with the Braisa.
Not because it would otherwise be a contradiction. We said the Braisa can. We said according to Rav Yosef, the Braisa could work according to Beis Hillel. The Braisa could work according to Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel would distinguish between whether the Keli is doing something active or not, whether there are moving parts or not. So in many of the cases in the Braisa, the Keli itself is not actually doing anything. So, for example, let's say when it comes to putting incense to perfume clothing, Beis Hillel wouldn't have a problem with it because the Keli that the incense is in is not actually doing anything; it's just sitting there passively. But on the other hand, the last part of the Braisa that mentioned, and the same thing in a number of the cases in our Mishnah, and in the case of the traps in our Mishnah, we'd say we're talking about passive traps. And as far as the Braisa had finished off, that you're not allowed to put wheat into a water mill before Shabbos because it'll get ground on Shabbos, according to the objective, even Beis Hillel would agree with that. So
that's what I'm saying. There are parts of the Braisa where you can't, that shows that it's not only about active moving or Maise, but it's
According to Rav Yosef, we explained the Braisa as going according to Beis Hillel. So we said Beis Hillel distinguishes between active and passive. So therefore, in the Braisa, you have a bunch of passive cases, and then you have one active case, namely the case of the millstone. And therefore, Rav Yosef is saying that that's the distinction Beis Hillel would be making. They do agree that Shavitas Kalim is Zoraisa, but they limit it only to active things, as opposed to the Shammai would say active or passive. Now we're saying, according to Rav Oshia, no, Beis Hillel does not hold of Shavitas Kalim at all. Therefore, the Braisa that we quoted before is actually according to Beis Shammai.
But why does Reb Oshia makes us change the view of Hillel that we had before?
Because that's what he learned from Reb Asi. That's what he learned from Reb Asi, from his Rebbe, and his Rebbe from his Rebbe, etc. That this is their understanding of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, that Beis Hillel does not hold of Shavitas Kalim at all. Only Beis Shammai holds of it. And therefore, the Beis Shammai ben ka'ovid ma'aseh ben deloy ka'ovid ma'aseh osir. Beis Shammai would say it would be osir whether the Keli is actively involved in the Malacha or not, as you see in the Mishnah, for example, about soaking ink stuff, where Beis Shammai has a problem with it, even though it's passive. Well, Beis Hillel, afagab, ka'ovid ma'aseh shari, as opposed to, according to Beis Hillel, even if the thing is actually active, then it would be mutter. Therefore, in our Mishnah, Beis Hillel has no problem with the trap, even if they're the active kind of trap, because you put it out before Shabbos. In the Braisa, when we said that you're not allowed to put wheat into a mill because it's going to get ground up on Shabbos, then we would have to say that is because of what Rabba said before, because of Nui.
So that's just the opinion of Reb Oshia.
That's fine.
It's not the opinion of the Gemara at this point.
No. One second. We have two opinions in the Gemara. We have Rav Yosef and we have Rav Oshia. We actually have to talk about it. We have to actually talk about soon who the halacha is like. So wait. Okay. Actually, let's talk about it now. So Tosfos discusses over here that the halacha ought to be like so basically it's not really Rav Yosef versus Rav Oshia really. Because what we have is fine. You have Rav Yosef and Rav Oshia have different understandings of Bishama of Bishilul's opinion. But the basic question was the braisa that we said before about allowing water to flow into your garden, etc. Who would that be like? Would it be like Bishama or like Bishilul? So Tosfos starts by quoting from a Ben Tam that the halacha would be like Rav Yosef. In other words, we're not worried about this matter of Hashmoah Kol. We would say, in other words, like this. Tosfos learns that Rav Yosef and Rav Oshia are not really arguing. They agree that this Hillel would say that Shvitas Kalim is mutter. Shvitas Kalim is mutter. There's no problem with Shvitas Kalim. Therefore, we would say the Braisa we quoted before would be according to Beis Shammai, which now the Gemara is going to work out how it works according to Beis Shammai. Therefore, Beis Hillel would disagree with everything in that Braisa. Beis Hillel would say that even as far as the grain and the millstones, you'd be allowed to do that before Shabbos. We're not worried about Hashmoah Kol, so therefore that would be that. On the other hand, Tosfos continues that no, actually, when the Gemara is going to continue and say that the Braita is according to Beis Shammai, that's not Rav Oshia's opinion. That's the Gemara saying that. Therefore, you're left with a machloikas between Rav Oshia and Rav Yosef, says Tosfos. And therefore, the halacha would actually be, in general, when we also have Rabba, who said before that there's a problem of a shmas kol, of something being very loud and noisy, and we have a general rule. When we have a machlokas, Rabba and Rav Yosef, the halacha is generally like Rabba. So you end up with a machlokas, we showed him who the halacha is like over here. So therefore, in other words, so again, the halacha obviously is like this hillel over Beis Shammai. The one way of looking at it is that this hillel is going to allow it always, whether the keli is active or passive, and even if the keli is making noise. The other way of looking at it is that, no, the Hillel would agree it's also if the keli is making noise. They would allow it as long as it's not making noise. So now, as far as this matter of grinding grain before Shabbos, therefore, you have a machlokas Rishonim, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, whether you're allowed to do that before Shabbos. Do you have a problem? And on top of that, you have other Rishonim point out that you also have an issue. If you have grain grinding before Shabbos in a millstone, it's not just the fact that it's noisy, it's also the fact that people are going to think that you did it on Shabbos itself. So what it brings in Shulchan Aruch is that you're not allowed to put what it says in Shulchan Aruch actually is like this. First, it brings an opinion, which is, again, the opinion of Tosfos over here, saying that you would be allowed to do that, because the halacha would be like Rav Yosef and Rav Oshia. We're not worried about the noise, because people know that these are millstones that are turned by water, therefore there's no issue. Then the Shulchan Aruch brings the Yesh Chokim al Zeh, that you have other opinions that disagree, which again, you have Tosfos over here bringing that the halacha may be like Rabbah, that wherever there's a shmoah kol, then you have a problem because people are going to think that the malacha was actually started on Shabbos itself. So it discusses in Shulchan Aruch, if the millstones belong to a goy, then you have other considerations. Then you have the consideration when you're allowed to have a goy do it for you or not. And then the Alter Rebbe says that we should be machmir like the second svara. So therefore, you wouldn't be allowed to do a malacha that involves noise on Shabbos.
So now, but if you started maybe odium, people hear that you started because this mill makes noise. So what's the problem? They know it's before Shabbos.
No, because actually the mill is constantly turning because the mill is powered by water and the water is constantly flowing. So therefore, no, people aren't going to realize that distinction that you put it in before Shabbos necessarily.
If they hear the noise before Shabbos, they won't know it's before Shabbos.
Not necessarily because the millstones are turning all the time. The millstones are turning even when you're not actually grinding flour because the water keeps them turning the whole time. Okay. So now is a good time actually to talk about the, so now that we've established, of course, the halacha is like the tefillah, and we're saying that and we're saying that the tefillah is not going to make a distinction whether the thing is active or passive or not. So this is a good time to talk about Shabbat clocks.
That's according to Oshia.
Well, so that's what he said. Again, Tosfos brings first from Rabbeinu Tam that maybe Rav Oshia and Rav Yosef are not actually arguing, and therefore the halacha would be like Rav Yosef, because Rav Oshia is saying that the Braisa, Rav Oshia would be saying, as we're going to go on to say, that the Braisa goes according to Beit Shammai, and the Tilo, meanwhile, would hold differently. Or you could say that no, Rav Oshia and Rav Yosef are in fact disagreeing, and then the halacha, then there's no particular reason to say the halacha is like Rav Yosef, and in fact the usual rule would apply that Rabba against Rav Yosef, the halacha is like Rabba. Rabba had said that fine, you're allowed to have your keli do malacha for you on Shabbos, but not when the keli makes a lot of noise, like millstones. Okay, so here's a good place to talk about Shabbos clock. So what's the deal with a Shabbos clock? You set it before Shabbos, and then you have it'll turn on a light, or it'll turn on or off a light, or an air conditioner, or what have you before Shabbos. So now this is an example of Shvitas Kalim. We're saying now that Shvitas Kalim, according to this Hillel, doesn't apply. On the other hand, so Rav Moshe has a couple of chuvas on the subject of Shabbos clocks. He doesn't like the idea at all. Because he says, listen, I mean, it's really not essentially different than, let's say, for example, you know, you're not allowed to ask a goy to do a malacha for you on Shabbos. It's pretty much the same thing. He says, it's one thing, for example, in the cases where we were quoting over here in the Gemara, let's say, for example, you open up the gate before Shabbos and it starts grinding, and then it starts filling up with water before Shabbos. Fine, at least the malacha began before Shabbos, and it's just continuing on Shabbos. As opposed to over here, you're actually beginning the malacha on Shabbos. He says, nothing doing. He says, in fact, he goes so far as to say, in fact, in one of his chuvas, that if these things existed, if Shabbos clocks like that had existed in the times of the Gemara, he says, there's no question the Chachamim would have answered them. So he says, it's one thing, okay.
Even if you set the clock to start before Shabbos?
No. If the light is on before Shabbos, then it's the light. But the whole point of a Shabbos clock is that you're setting it to do something on Shabbos, to turn on or off the light, for example, or to turn on and off the air conditioner. So regardless, you're setting it to do a malacha on Shabbos. So Moshe says, it's one thing maybe with lights you can be mateful, because after all, you have, even in the olden days, when they used candles and lamps or whatever, they were hekeirim to be able to tell a goy to extinguish the lamp or to light them on Shabbos for the sake of the tibur or whatever. So therefore, fine. You know, he says that you want to be naked. So he says, it's one thing as far as lights. Okay, you have at least, you know, back when they used oil lamps or candles or what have you, you had a tatum to be able to, light them or extinguish them on Shabbos. But as far as other things, the Moshe says, absolutely no. There's no Shabbos clock.
Isn't it a gzera? Because the Torah says fire.
No. Turning on light, turning on and off light is also midaraita, according to almost all hosting. But anyway, that's
not a fire.
It doesn't matter. The electricity is still also on Shabbos. It's not a zero to that one. It's a midaraita. What av malacha it is? You have a machloket among achronim, whether it's mavir and machaber, whether it's boina, etc. But just about everybody agrees that electricity is also on Shabbos. Anyway, that's Rav Moshe. Most other posts from achronim do disagree with Rav Moshe on that, and they're more lenient on using Shabbos clocks to do things like turn on and off air conditioners and things like that. And that's generally how the minhag of the veldt is like that you're allowed to use Shabbos clocks for such purposes. To use a Shabbos clock, though, let's say, to turn on and off a radio or a TV or whatever, that the poskim don't like, because there, again, you have the problem of it being noisy, as we're saying over here. Then it's a real zilzal of Shabbos. Okay, let's go on. Okay, so again, so we're saying that according to the Oshia's understanding now, we're saying that the Hill has no problem with Shvitas Kalim at all, whether the Kalim is active or passive. And therefore, that means the braisa before goes according to the chama. The braisa that we quoted before about opening up the gate and letting the water flow in, etc. So the question is, the question is then in that case, in the braisa that we said before, why is the chama allowing you to put out the incense or to put out the sulfur? They're in kalim. And if we're saying the chama doesn't allow, even if the kavi is passive, then why are they allowing it in that case? The answer is hot manacha ala. They would say, because over there it's just lying on the ground. No, they would say that we have to be talking about where the mugmer or the sulfur was directly on the ground. They would say, you're right. It would be us. If you were to put them in a keli, and if you were to put them in a keli, they would, in fact, be us. They're only mutter if you put them on the ground. Okay. What about Gigas Venev Kedero Shvud, my time of Shorobis Shammai? Okay, so that explains the cases of the previous Braisa then. So now we have, in all the cases of the previous Braisa, you have it's just the ground. You have, for example, in the first case, you just opened up the gate. Nothing, there's no actual Kaili there to even say that you're doing a Malacha with. In the case of the incense and the sulfur, we said they're just lying on the ground. They're not lying on a Kaili. In the case of the medicine, in the case of the dressing on the eye or whatever, there's no actual keli there either, so fine. So the shama is going to allow it. In the case of the millstone, they wouldn't. Again, not so much because it's active, but because there it is an actual keli. But the question is, gigis, what about if you're soaking barley or whatever to make beer? Now, it needs to soak for a long time. It needs to soak for at least a week. So you're always going to have a Shabbos in between. So there you have a keli doing a malacha for you on Shabbos. The ner, or if you light a lamp or a candle before Shabbos, ukzera, or if you have a pot left on the fire before Shabbos, ushvud, or you have a spit with meat roasting on it before Shabbos, all of those things, my time is shoru bet shamai. Why would bet shamai allow any of those things? If you're telling me that bet shamai doesn't allow shvisat kalim, even if the keli is completely passive, here you have a keli in all these cases. It's passive, but fine, the shamai still doesn't like it. Still holds also as Shvisas Kalim. So how do they allow any of these things?
Right.
The answer is the maskula hu askuri. The answer is the Shama would say, as a matter of fact, yes, you have to be maskur the Kali before Shabbat. Once you're maskur, it doesn't belong to you. Therefore, you'd be allowed to, therefore, it's allowed to be doing Malacha on Shabbat. Now, so according to Rashi and Tosfos, what we actually literally mean is that according to Bishamai, you would have to say before Shabbos, my pot is hefker or my lamp is hefker or what have you. According to the Ritva talks about, he says not necessarily do you need to actually according to Bishamai, to actually say explicitly, I am being master of this. It would be enough to actually, the Rashba, not the Ritva, whatever. The Rashba says that actually it wouldn't have to be that you yourself are master it. Basin is master it on your behalf, according to the Shammai, to prevent you from being overrun and issued. Okay. So far, that's where we're at. Again, so what we're saying so far is, that Bethilo does not hold of Shvitas Kalim at all. Therefore, according to Bethilo, you don't have to be master anything before Shabbos. You're allowed to start Malacha before Shabbos and have it continue on Shabbos. And it doesn't have to have had enough time to finish before Shabbos, whether the keli is active or passive. Again, according to Rabbah, you do have the consideration that it can't be making noise. And you have, again, as we said, you have Rishonim who passed in like Rabbah in that regard. But other than that, you'd be allowed to start a malacha on Shabbos and have it continue before Shabbos and have it continue on Shabbos. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Man tana loha de tana rabbanon. Okay, which Tana would it be when we have, again, this Shammai and this Hill, we have a Braisa that says as follows, Loi tamala isha kedera asosius v'turmasin. A woman is not allowed to fill up a pot full of asosius or turmasin, which are various kinds of beans. Rashi and Tosfos both explain that these are things that take a long time to cook. The Rambam holds the other way around. These are things that take a very short time to cook. Anyway, taniach let's say hatanu el Shabbos in kashecha and put them into the oven right before Shabbos. She's not allowed to do that before Shabbos. The im nosnon, and if she did put them, then on Motzei Shabbos, then on Motzei Shabbos, it will be also to eat these beans, these cooked beans, unless enough time has passed for them to be cooked. Because you don't want her to be able to benefit from the malacha that was done on Shabbos. So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about over here, these are beans that take a long time to cook. You put them in the oven before Shabbos, it's going to take them over 24 hours to cook. So therefore, according to that, then you're gaining from the fact that you put them in before Shabbos, because you, like this, you would have had to wait till Motzei Shabbos to start cooking them. So instead, you're putting them in Erev Shabbos and letting them cook in there over Shabbos. But now we're saying that you're not allowed to eat them after Shabbos. You would have to wait over 24 hours after Shabbos ends in order that you're not having hanah from the malacha that was done on Shabbos. According to the Rambam, it's different. According to the Rambam, and this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, these are actually beans that take a very short time to cook. So therefore, the problem is, if you put them in, as the Gemara is going to discuss now, if you put them into the oven before Shabbos, there's a possibility that you might stir them on Shabbos. Anyway, Kayotzeba, he continues the Brisa, similarly, similarly, a baker is not allowed to fill up a container full of water, a barrel full of water, and put it into the oven right before Shabbos, meaning with the idea that this way he'll have hot water first thing after Shabbos. And if he does that, then it's also to have hanah from that water, unless he waits enough time after Shabbos for the water to have been able to boil. So the question with that, lema bis shamay, he's a lema bis hilal. On the face of it, that's only according to bis shamay. On the face of it, the problem is shvitas kalim. If we're saying now that the hilal doesn't hold of shvitas kalim, only bis shamay does, then it would mean that this braita is only according to bis shamay and bis hilal. But bis hilal would allow you to eat the beans or to drink or to use the water immediately after Shabbos. No, you could even say this braita works according to bis hilal. But the reason why is something different. The reason why is because we don't want him to be stirring the coals on Shabbos to make it cook faster or to make it heat up faster. Even bis hilal would agree with that issue. So now we have a new factor that we're introducing. That even bis hilal is going to have a problem when you started a malacha of cooking before Shabbos, where there's the problem that you may end up trying to stir it up and make it cook faster on Shabbos, which of course would be after. So the question is, in that case, then returning to the braisa on Amar Aleph, talking about incense or talking about sulfur, then why is bis hilal allowing it? We said that maybe even bis shamay would allow it if it's on the ground. Bis hilal allows it even if it's in a keli. But why would they allow it? If we're saying now that there's a problem that you might stir the coals. The answer is, on the contrary, in cases like that, he's not going to stir the coals to make them burn faster. Because if he does stir the coals, what's going to happen is everything is going to get full of smoke. It's bad for the clothes that you're trying to perfume, or it's bad for the silver that you're trying to get the designs to come out. So therefore, on the contrary, once you put them down over there to burn, you want them to burn slowly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So he's going not going to touch them.
So he's not going to stir them. What about unin shalpishta nami ligzer? What about the case of the bundle of flax in the oven, where we said in the Mishnah that bis hilal allows it? Why don't we have a problem that he's going to stir the coals? And the answer is kiven dekoshi lahuzika. The answer is he's not going to stir the coals, because to stir the coals you would have to open up the oven. And the air coming in is that kiven dekoshi lahuzika. The air, the wind or whatever, is bad for the flax that's drying. Loy magule, therefore he's not going to uncover the oven in order to stir the coals, because then he'll ruin the flax. So that would be mutter. Okay. What about semer l'yoyra ligzer? What about in the next case of the Mishnah, where you put wool into a vat to dye, and we said Mishrama doesn't allow it before Shabbos unless there's enough time for it to absorb the dye before Shabbos. They still allow it. Why? If you might stir the coals to make the dye heat up faster and get absorbed better. So Shmuel said you're right. When the hilal allows it, would be that has to be off the fire. So it's off the fire. There's no problem of stirring the coals. Okay, the question still is, don't you have another problem, though, that you might stir the actual pot, you might stir the actual material in the vat to get it to boil more evenly and get absorbed more evenly? The answer is v'akura v'tucha. The answer is you're right. The hilal would allow it only if the vat is off the fire and it's sealed shut. So then it would be mutter, because then we're not so worried that you're going to uncover it and stir it. First of all, Tosfos says that the cover is on very tightly now, it's sealed shut. second, and also because it's not as usual to stir it as much as you would stir the cold. Okay. So now let's continue with another din that comes out of that. Now that we've said that you're making a gzera when you leave something on the fire before Shabbos, we said there's a problem of that you might stir the coals. Then in that case, then if you have a pot of raw food, shori la'anucha erev Shabbos in chashecha b'tanura, then you would be allowed to put that on erev Shabbos. You would be allowed to put that on erev Shabbos before Shabbos begins into the oven. A pot full of raw food, for example, raw meat.
Right.
The point is, you're not going to stir it in order for it to cook tonight, because you're not going to be able to eat it tonight, because it's obviously not going to cook in time, no matter how much you stir the coals. By tomorrow, by the Shabbos day meal, it'll already be cooked, etc. It'll already be cooked completely. So therefore, there's no problem that you're going to stir the coals. That's the thing. Rashi says before, when he talked about the beans, for example, the difference is that even you need the entire Shabbos for them to cook. So therefore, you may stir the coals during Shabbos in order to have them done as soon as possible, most of Shabbos. But here you have, there's enough time without stirring the coals for it to be ready for the Shabbos day meal, and the Shabbos night meal, there's not going to be enough time for anyway. So therefore, it's allowed. My time, because since it's not suitable to use by night, therefore, he's going to be Masiach Dashmit. He's going to leave it alone. And he's not going to come to stir the coals. So therefore, that would be Mutter. Uboshil Shatter Dummy. Now, on the other hand, also, if the pot is completely cooked, then it's also Mutter, because again, then at that point, you don't need to stir the coals anymore because it's completely cooked. Actually, you have in Shulchan Aruch talking about there are distinctions that post that some of the Rishonim want to make between whether it's the kind of thing where if you continue cooking it, it'll become better and better, versus the kind of thing where if you cook it, then where the longer you cook it, eventually it's going to start getting spoiled. So some of the Rishonim make that distinction, that if it's something that we're going to learn about it in the third parish, called Mitzamek V'yotaloi, where the longer it stays on the fire, the better it becomes, then it might be also, even if it's completely cooked, because you still might stir the coals in order to get it to cook even better. Other Rishonim don't accept that attention. Okay.
A challah that was ready before Shabbos, let's say you bought it in the store, you made it yourself.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to warm it up on Shabbos by opening the oven and, you know, not turning on the oven is on, but just putting the challah in the oven?
In theory, yes, because there's a concept called Ein Oifa Acha Oifa, because you have a concept that once it's baked, it can't be baked anymore. But it's a little bit tricky, among other things, because you have to consider if there's any liquid in it that might ooze out. Sometimes you have soft challah where you have that maybe not challah so much. But you have, for example, with chicken, let's say, for example, you have fat that's going to melt. Then you have more of an issue. That we'll talk about later. That we'll talk about another time, though. Okay.
But the challah
maybe there's. Because it's already baked and there's nothing that oozes out of it. But let's finish the Gemara over here. Okay. So again, if the pot was completely raw when you put it in and before Shabbos, then it would be allowed. If it's completely cooked, then it's also allowed. If it's only partially cooked, then it would be also because then you might stir it on Shabbos. Then you might stir the coals to make it cook better on Shabbos. The garmachaya, but if you put into it one raw piece of meat, then it would be mutter. Shaffer dummy, then it's fine, because once you put in that one raw piece, obviously you're making that the whole pot is not going to be ready before Shabbos, is not going to be ready for the night meal, and therefore we're back to that there's no problem because you're not going to stir the coals on Shabbos to make it cook faster.
But stirring the coal is not the only problem. Bishul is also a problem. Why there's no bishul here?
The problem is mainly stirring the coals, because you may stir the coals to make it cook faster. Stirring the pot is also an issue, but it's less of an issue because stirring the pot doesn't necessarily make it cook any faster. It makes it cook better. But here we're talking about the question, you want to make it that it's going to, that it's going, you want to stir the pot, so you want to stir the coals rather to make it be able to cook faster. And that would be the problem. So again, you put in a raw piece right before Shabbos, then it'll be mutter, even though the rest of the pot is cooked, because that one raw piece is not going to be able to be cooked before Shabbos begins. All right. Well, we're out of time now, so we'll continue tomorrow with the subject of pots and food of food that's cooking or roasting or whatever before Shabbos, and then we'll talk more tomorrow about things, what you're allowed and not allowed to have a goy do on Shabbos.
But regarding this last example of an uncooked, a raw piece of meat that you put in the oven on Shabbos, even though you're not stirring it
stop a second. You didn't put in the piece on Shabbos. Of course that would be also true. You have a whole pot of food on the fire before Shabbos. Then right before Shabbos, you put in, now let's say that all the food in the pot was partially cooked. So then we're saying you have a problem leaving it on the fire on Shabbos because you may stir the coals. But what we're saying is if you put in one raw piece, then if you put in one raw piece, which is not possibly going to be cooked before Shabbos, no matter how much you stir the coals, then you're allowed to leave the rest of it on the fire before Shabbos because then you're obviously not going to stir the coals because it's not going to help it be cooked any faster. So the fact that you put in one raw piece demonstrates that you're not planning to eat it tonight. And by tomorrow, it's going to be cooked anyway, whether you stir the coals or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. Okay, mm-hmm. We'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, with a little more detail about this.
Thank you very much.